The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. It's never a good thing to be caught between the world's two biggest superpowers, but it's also not clear Canada ever had much of a choice. It's been about 6 weeks now since Canada arrested a Chinese executive at the request of our friends to the south, and seemingly every day since then brings a fresh crack in our fragile relationship with China.
The impacts are being felt around the world after a member of China's corporate royalty was arrested by Canadian authorities at the request of the United States.
China confirmed last night that it has detained two Canadians on suspicion of endangering national security.
Canadian Robert Lloyd Schellenberg sentenced today to death by a Chinese court for drug smuggling.
And now the government faces a decision that may shatter that relationship. How did we come so far down this road? What is at stake when Canada decides whether or not to ban Huawei from our 5G network? Dollars, trade deals, lives? Was there ever a good way out of this? And how does it all end? It might not be long now until we either have to mend some serious diplomatic fences or until we find out just how bad it gets when you mess with China. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Cormac McSweeney is the Parliament Hill reporter for City News and for Rogers radio stations across the country. Cormac, explain to me quickly, if you can do that, how this started and where we stand now with our relationship with China.
Yeah, just to preface this whole interview, this is such a complex and layered story and situation that Canada and China find themselves in that, you know, it's really hard to explain sometimes and understandable if people kind of get lost with all of the twists and turns that have happened. But the diplomatic dispute, as we know it, basically started on December 1st when Canadian authorities arrested Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou at the request of American authorities. They were seeking her extradition to the United States over fraud allegations, and that stems from the fact that the U.S. has sanctions on Iran, and they accuse Huawei of trying to lie to financial institutions in the U.S. to get around those sanctions on Iran. And so that's why she was wanted, because they intend to press charges. And of course, Canadian authorities, we have an extradition treaty with the United States. So they followed through on that request to arrest her. And that infuriated officials in China, who then targeted Canada with criticisms demanding her release, even though, of course, our hands are kind of tied because of our extradition treaty. Days later, two Canadians, diplomat on leave Michael Kovrig and entrepreneur Michael Spavor, were arrested on suspicion of endangering national security in China. And they were detained and immediately were not really given any consular access or access to legal counsel. And of course, that what followed were days and weeks of diplomatic back and forth of demands for release. Of course, Canada gradually strengthening its language in all of this. Initially, they tried to play it cool, and then it got stronger and stronger. They finally called the arrest arbitrary, demanded the release of the men. Then on the day of the cabinet shuffle last week, and it's hard not to see the timing of this as just a coincidence. A Chinese court took a third Canadian out of jail, Robert Schellenberg, and held a hasty retrial for him and then sentenced him to death. He was originally convicted to 15 years in jail because of drug smuggling back in 2016. But that really escalated the situation. And so that's kind of where we stand right now with this diplomatic dispute, where we have two Canadians detained, a third on death row, all because of the original arrest of the Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou, who I will say is out on bail, living in a home, able to walk around Vancouver within certain limits, of course, but a much different situation than our Canadians are in right now in these Chinese jails.
Do we have any idea how bad things have gotten for the Canadians who've been detained and what Canada is doing about it?
Yeah, so there are several different things that we're looking at here. I mean, the diplomatic efforts will continue to try and gain the release of these men. And, of course, access to the men who are in jail is an issue right now. The Globe and Mail has reported that Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor are being mistreated while they're in prison. They are the lights are not turned off for 24 hours a day. The lights are always on. They're being interrogated regularly, and they're only allowed to have consular visits with embassy staff once a month for about a half an hour. And so gaining more access, gaining more international support to try and secure that release is going to be, one of the priority areas for this government. The international support and pressure will likely continue to build. Canada's been trying to gather as many allies as it possibly can. And the list keeps growing with countries that are now speaking out against China on this.
So what kind of options does the government have? Because it does seem like the ball is in their court on at least one issue.
So Huawei is one of the applicants who's trying to get access to Canada's new 5G networks. And 5G technology, I'm not a technical expert, so I don't know everything about this, but I do know that 5G is the next generation of wireless technology. And if you've ever looked at your cell phone over the last like 5 to 10 years, you've seen it change from like LTE to 3G to 4G. Well, 5G is that next step. But yeah, it's corporately, there's a lot of competition to gain access to different countries' 5G networks because it'll be faster, it'll be better, all that jazz for the consumers. And so Huawei is one of the bidders on that, and Canada has been, the government has been doing a security review on the applicants to see who actually gets access to 5G networks. And that's a big question looming out of all of this. There were questions about it well before this whole diplomatic dispute even came to be. There were people saying that we should be banning Huawei, others saying, let's just, take a very cautious approach to all of this. But now this has definitely put even more of a spotlight on that decision. And a lot more is on the line now with whether or not Huawei gets that access.
Right. Well, there's the diplomatic issues and there's security issues on top of that, right? I can't imagine anybody being thrilled right now to allow China access to that technology.
So it's interesting to note that officials in both countries aren't actually linking the Huawei 5G decision to the diplomatic dispute. They're trying to kind of keep them as separate, but it's almost impossible to really separate them, especially when the Chinese ambassador to Canada, while speaking with reporters at the Chinese embassy in Ottawa, was talking about the diplomatic dispute and defending the Chinese government's actions and lashing out at the Trudeau government, also found it necessary to issue a threat saying there will be repercussions for Canada if Huawei is banned from the 5G networks. So with
Which
that
seems
comment,
super ominous, like considering the diplomatic culture right now.
It does. And you know what? I will say that we did get a threat from Chinese officials earlier on in this whole dispute. After the two arrests, they said that things could escalate even further. And then a little bit later, we found out about the hasty retrial and the death sentence handed to a Canadian. So if you're one of the people who sees all of these situations and these issues being linked, then you would say that, look, they followed through on their threat before about escalating this further, and right, whether or not we ban Huawei could lead to further consequences.
Up next.
So there have been questions about whether China would meddle in our election process, much like we've seen the issues that popped up when the Russians were interfering with the American election.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us. So is this good timing or bad timing for Trudeau and the Liberals? Because it kind of seems like something like this actually gives them some power when they're entering diplomatic negotiations. Is this a lever for them?
Yes and no, kind of. I mean, China, obviously, with the threat coming from the Chinese ambassador, is putting a lot of weight into this decision. But that could be bad for the government as well, because China is trying to use this as a lever, saying, you better do this or else, your Canadians are going to continue to go through this situation, the current situation with the two detained and the one on death row. And there could be further repercussions as a result. for the Trudeau government, they may want to hold back on that decision and not commit to anything in order to ensure that, you know, we see the release of the two detained Canadians and clemency for the third Canadian. You know, it's also very, very tricky because the situation here is that Huawei could be seen as a national security threat. There have been a lot of questions about the relationship between the Chinese government and Huawei, which the Chinese government has proudly said is like a corporate champion of China. And there are serious fears about cyber espionage. And as much as Canada could possibly use this decision, if you're looking at it just from pure negotiating terms, to possibly secure the release of the two Canadians and gain clemency for the third, the other question you have to ask yourself is, what is the cost of that, though? Because if Huawei is a national security threat, if there are concerns about cyber espionage with Huawei, why would you give that company access to such a critical piece of information or infrastructure like the 5G wireless network? And then what does that say, you know, for how Canada could be, you know, threatened in the future over corporate decisions about whether a company should have access to our 5G network or not, or other situations. If all it's going to take is detaining, throwing some people in jail, threatening the death sentence. So there are larger implications to this whole decision, and it's not an easy decision for this government to make, and it's becoming trickier and trickier as time goes by and the Chinese take further actions.
Well, and as time goes by, the election is getting closer as well, and China knows that. Do we have a sense, given that they're obviously not the darlings of the Trudeau government anymore, how the fact that we're 8 months out from a federal vote is impacting this?
So there have been questions about whether China would meddle in our election process, much like we've seen the issues that popped up when the Russians were interfering with the American election. I spoke with one expert about this, and they said, you know, maybe it's a possibility. It could happen. But they told me that the meddling that China does when it comes to elections and politics on foreign soil is a lot different than what you would see with the Russians, where the Russians are a little bit more focused on, you know, the cyber aspect of disrupting a society, where they're going to try and influence people's minds through fake news, through stuff that pops up on your inbox or on your Facebook page. Meanwhile, with China, the way they tend to try and influence elections, if they were to try and influence an election, is much more of a ground game strategy. There's a large Chinese population here in Canada, and they can easily work people on the ground, work expatriates who are living here now, to try and rally support, to switch hands, to change seats, to really try and influence people. And so it's a little bit different in that regard. But then the question is, who else would come into power that would really favor China? And the conservatives have been outspoken against Huawei, against the Chinese government. They've called on the Trudeau government to take a harder stance with the Chinese. Stephen Harper, when he was prime minister, was actually criticized for what many viewed as taking a number of steps back in Canada-Chinese relations. And so you don't really have a friend in that party. And, you know, it's not clear that the NDP would be any closer of a party that would be, you know, in favor of China. So even if they did meddle in our elections, the question would be how much meddling would be done, and who would they support if they were trying to do stuff? Or maybe it's just all out disruption, regardless of who wins power.
I'm fascinated by the way this all began, because it seems to have snowballed so quickly over the last 6 or 7 weeks, to the point that, you know, we've now got Canadians sentenced to death. We've now got international incidents. It started because America asked us to do something that we've agreed to do for them. So was there ever a way that Canada could have handled this better? Was there ever a way that Trudeau could have gotten out ahead of this? It seems like we're in a no-win situation.
Yeah, from the get-go, when all of this started, I think observers and experts noted very quickly how the Trudeau government was basically stuck between a rock and a hard place. You have your closest ally, the USA, all of a sudden getting you stuck in this tricky situation through this extradition request. The Chinese government, where it could have, you know, thrown its criticisms towards the United States for trying to lay fraud charges and using an extradition treaty with Canada to try and get an executive arrested, instead focused its anger on Canada. At that point, who do you criticize as the government?
Yeah.
You know, the Chinese government, we were in talks to possibly steer towards a free trade agreement with China. We had just landed a free trade agreement with the United States under Donald Trump. And it did appear at the start as if there's a no-win situation for the Trudeau government. However, the opposition has, you know, it doesn't matter what the situation in politics, there's somebody somewhere who finds fault in what you're doing.
Right.
But the opposition has been, you know, they've been critical of Huawei for some time. And they're critical of the Trudeau government in this situation, saying that from the start, they haven't really seen a strategic plan from the Trudeau government where they should have been prepared for something like this. And so they claim that the government has not been showing leadership. And even though they were stuck in a tough position, the way they've handled this situation has not been the greatest. They think that the Trudeau government should be taking steps such as banning Huawei right away to show China that they're serious, as well possibly getting the foreign affairs minister or the prime minister himself to either pick up the phone to their counterpart or travel out to China and have a face-to-face meeting. Some have said, you know, look, China and the Chinese government, they pride these honorable face-to-face conversations more than they do what the Chinese ambassador claimed was sort of microphone diplomacy. But at the same time, you know, there are questions about whether that would do more harm than good. The prime minister has come out and said, look, I used to be in that position where I criticized Stephen Harper, saying, you know, the former conservative prime minister should just pick up the phone and secure the release of Canadian. Now, as a prime minister, he realizes it's not that simple. It's a very sensitive and delicate situation. The other question about this, saying ban Huawei right away, there are threats of repercussions, further repercussions.
Right.
It's easy to ask for that, but to wear that and to be the one responsible for whatever those repercussions may end up being, you know, it's not that simple of a decision to make, and it's not that simple of a call to make to have possible further consequences. And the Chinese have already shown they can escalate things rather quickly when they went from just a simple detention to all of a sudden sentencing a Canadian to death.
Right. And where would that end? Like, that's what's, I think, troubling to me and probably to a lot of Canadians who have just sort of been casually following the daily developments of this.
I still think we're far away from this getting to the point of no return in terms of relations with China. It is not good, as I've said, and it could possibly get worse. But we have to also keep in mind that there are deep business ties between China and Canada. And it's actually, you know, we spoke a little bit earlier about levers that could be used to try and solve this situation. And the Trudeau government is now turning to the business community because of those business ties. I mean, China's Canada's third largest trading partner. And if you turn to the business leaders, and not just the relationship between China and Canada, the warning that the government is issuing now to those business leaders in China is that this is not good for you, not just for your, you know, whatever business you might have with Canada, but anywhere else in the world. All of these allies who have spoken up with Canada to denounce the detentions and the death sentence, why would they want to do business with Chinese companies? Your reputation might be ruined if the Chinese government, the moment there is an international issue, is going to take actions like this. And the business leaders in China could possibly put pressure on the government to make some changes here to make sure that they don't suffer as a result. China's been slowly moving towards more and more of a corporate focus. There are a lot of companies that have become big, important business powers around the world. And if that's going to be put on the line, then there might be more pressure on the Chinese government. At least that's the thinking. We'll have to wait and see how that strategy pans out.
And in the meantime, when is the Huawei 5G decision expected?
We don't know for sure. I mean, there have been reports that say it could be months away. The public safety minister, Ralph Goodale, was asked about that at the caucus meeting that the Liberals have held in the lead up to the spring sitting of Parliament. And he wouldn't really give an answer on that. But I think what's really interesting about his response to questions on the Huawei 5G decision, he you know, went over a lot of the same talking points we've heard that, look, Canada's interests come first in this decision. We will not make a decision that compromises national security. A lot of the stuff we'd expected him to say. But when asked about whether Huawei was the only company that could provide the 5G network, he said no, you know, essentially saying they have options here. And so whether that's a signal, whether I'm reading too much into that or not, it was an interesting turn of language for the Trudeau government in saying that specifically, that there are other companies that can easily fill our 5G gap that as we look to build up this critical next generation of wireless technology. There are many of our allies who have already taken steps to restrict or outright ban Huawei.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't be offside with a lot of our allies if we were to take this step. The United States has already blocked Huawei from 5G. Australia, New Zealand, who are important allies in our Five Eyes. This is a group of five countries that share intelligence information that Canada's a part of. So they have already taken the step of banning Huawei because of the fears of cyber espionage through these data networks. So steps have been taken by our allies. It wouldn't be out of step for Canada to do that. But, you know, we're still waiting for that decision from the Trudeau government. And whenever that decision does come out, it will be a lot is riding on it and how the Trudeau government handles the situation, because there is literally a life on the line here as this dispute continues.
Thanks for helping us untangle this.
Anytime.
Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill reporter for City News and for Rogers Radio brands across the country. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca or along with our brother and sister shows at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. You can hit up contact us forms on both those websites to tell us about stories we should be covering, podcasts we should be listening to, maybe yours, anything you want, really. We do take feedback. And you can give us that feedback on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN or at Frequency Pods. And we are Frequency Podcast Network on Facebook and on Instagram. Hit us up wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.